ABC Radio Australia.
When we think of sea level rise and the destruction caused by climate change, we often think about the immediate impact of people losing their homes and being forced to migrate. But a new report says the loss of citizenship and nationality should also be factored in when we think about climate change. The report from the University of New South Wales and the University of Melbourne says legal steps must be taken by Pacific countries to protect the rights of their people. Joining me now is Professor Michelle Foster, Director of the Peter McMullen Centre on Statelessness at the University of Melbourne. Dr. Foster, thank you very much for joining us on Pacific Beat this morning.
Good morning. You're welcome.
Can we just start with what is statelessness and how does it connect to climate change?
It's a great question. So statelessness, the idea of statelessness is the person is stateless if no country recognises them as a national. Now, a person may be born into statelessness or they may lose their nationality in the context of not gaining another nationality and therefore they are left without a nationality. How does it connect to climate change? Well, as you just said, Pacific Island states, as we know, are bearing the brunt of the worst impacts of climate change. And while most Pacific Islanders want to remain in their homes for as long as possible, Pacific governments are increasingly, albeit reluctantly, considering cross-border mobility as one means of protecting their people from the impacts of climate change. So if people must leave their homes, perhaps permanently, we asked, what happens to their legal connection with their home country? Will they retain that nationality or are they at risk of losing that nationality? And what we found was that under current citizenship laws, and we analysed the citizenship laws of 23 Pacific Island countries and territories, we found that some Pacific Islanders who leave their homes permanently are at risk of losing the citizenship of their home country or losing the ability to pass this on to their children. And in some cases, not all, but in some cases, they may even become stateless. And what we also found is that some people may be at risk of statelessness and nationality loss even now, even before they lose they leave their country. So, for example, if there are insufficient safeguards in nationality law to ensure that all children have a nationality at birth. Another example would be gender discrimination in nationality law. So there, I guess what our report is finding is that, or found, is that there are some reforms that are required immediately to ensure that no one is stateless. But then also reforms that are needed to ensure that statelessness or loss of nationality does not ensue if people are required to leave their homes.
Dr. Foster, are there examples of this happening right now in the Pacific where people are becoming stateless or losing their nationality as a result of climate change?
So our report, as I mentioned, we looked at the nationality laws of 23 countries and we regard this as a first step to sort of analyse, you know, is there a risk? And then the next step would be to undertake research to find out, are there examples of these in individual cases? What we do know is that Pacific states are thinking about virtual statehood. So Tuvalu, for example, has set out a plan to digitise all government services and archive Tuvalu's history and culture to create a digital nation that would retain its sovereignty. So if states are starting to think about this, our report argues they must think about all the implications of movement and that citizenship needs to be, you know, very much at the forefront. As we say, it's not just about statelessness, it's also about loss of nationality because, of course, most immediately, loss of citizenship would mean a loss of voting rights in a country. And indeed, in some countries, citizens who reside overseas will lose their voting rights. And so we can see that there's already going to be a disconnection if people need to move. And certainly if there's ideas of having some kind of government, you know, in exile or externally, there needs to be consideration to what the nationality, you know, what the composition of that nation would be if people have lost their citizenship. That's obviously going to be a problem.
You mentioned Tuvalu as the gold standard there. Are there countries that are of concern who have high risks during your research?
Look, what we found across the board, as I said, we looked at the 23 countries and what we found is that there are issues sort of across the broad horizon of all of those countries. There are countries that have specific challenges. Of course, the picture is a little complicated because some countries still retain the citizenship laws of former colonial powers. It's really quite a complex mix there and it's sort of difficult to pull out, you know, one country is the gold standard or one country that, you know, is in particular need of attention. I would say this is an issue that probably requires a regional approach and requires, and I mean, what I really want to emphasise is that we recognise that nationality laws are integral to sovereignty, and it is ultimately up to the countries involved to think about what reform they would like to undertake. We're not necessarily telling Pacific Island countries what they should do. We're simply pointing out that there are a range of challenges. And we've analysed it by reference to what we regard as the key components of safeguards in international law, and made a range of recommendations as to what states should do in each of those areas. So we've sort of set out, you know, where there's gender discrimination, this needs to be reformed. Where there's a lack of a safeguard at birth, this can be reformed. And we've contrasted perhaps some of the challenging situations with other situations that are more positive. So, you know, I'm sort of hesitant to point out, identify particular problematic countries. I think we can say across the board, countries in the Pacific do need to pay attention to this. And it's been an understudied area. I think there's been a lot of attention on statelessness as an issue internationally, and that's rightly so. There's been a lot of attention on climate change, again, very importantly. But this is what we think is the first study that's really brought those two issues together in the context of the Pacific.
Is it because we're so focused on the immediate damage of climate change and the impact it's having on people's lives and communities that there hasn't been a focus on what happens afterwards and towards the next generation that might be affected by, say, migration from the impacts of climate change?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. But I guess what we have found is that Pacific nations are themselves starting to think about cross-border mobility. Clearly, most people would prefer to stay in their own state. Of course, that's the case. But we know that Pacific countries are facing up to what, unfortunately, might be the reality that movement may be required. And so our report, we think, is timely in that sense, in the sense of sort of encouraging Pacific Island countries to think about, okay, if this does eventuate, what other safeguards do we need to ensure are in place?
If you've just tuned in, I'm chatting with Professor Michelle Forster, Director of the Peter McMullen Centre on Statelessness at the University of Melbourne. Now, Dr. Forster, these Pacific countries that you've looked at, those 23, often they're usually quite stretched in terms of finances and reforming their law systems and things like that. So is this an initiative that countries like Australia may be able to support?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I would say in the context of statelessness, countries in the region could provide technical assistance, but it's also important to think about the role of international agencies. So the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees is the UN agency that has the remit to identify stateless populations and to prevent and protect stateless populations. And they, of course, we have a representative in our Canberra office that has the remit for the Pacific. And this, the UNHCR certainly provides technical assistance to states who are keen and interested in reforming their nationality law. So it's certainly something that the international community can assist in. Of course, as I said, I want to keep emphasising that it's absolutely fundamental that this is undertaken, by Pacific nations themselves. This it's a matter of sovereignty, the nationality laws of a state. We're making recommendations that we think would be in the best interest, if I can say that, of Pacific nations. But there certainly is assistance available. And the UNHCR has a campaign to eradicate statelessness by 2024, the I Belong campaign, which is a mark of how the extent to which the international community is now focused on statelessness. I think it's fair to say that statelessness has been an issue that was overlooked for a very long time. It's not because we haven't had statelessness for a long time. We've always had statelessness. But it's an issue that the international community has increasingly focused on. And there's an estimated 10 to 15 million people in the world who are stateless. And of course, as part of the UNHCR campaign, they want to ensure that we don't create new situations of statelessness. So we want to prevent, we want to eradicate statelessness, and we want to prevent new cases. And so this is very much an area of interest for the international community.
Like you were saying, Pacific governments need to be part of this change that needs to take place. Has there been any feedback from Pacific governments, and do you think this is something that they'd be keen to follow up on?
Well, that's a really good question. We haven't yet presented our report. It's just being released today, so it's hot off the press. We haven't had the opportunity yet to engage with government, but that's certainly something that we hope to be able to do, and certainly would offer any advice that that we could. But yes, it's absolutely essential. I mean, as you would know, there are, you know, many opportunities, there are many processes in place, there are frameworks being developed. There is a lot of attention being given to this issue in this region. And certainly if we can feed into that, we would be very keen to do so.
Dr. Foster, thank you very much for coming on Pacific Beat and talking to us about this new report.
Thank you so much.